We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the pre-lottery pick podcast. Maybe that's even being optimistic. Lottery pick, the pre-lottery podcast, where there is a small chance we might have a pick. I always love the draft, so this Tuesday is a big day for me. Finding out whether our team's actually going to be able to be in the draft at the top of it or not means that if they do, I get to spend a lot of time at Draft Express and just read all kinds of things. That's very exciting for me. Do you love Draft Express as much as I do, Mike?
I mean, honestly, at this point, I already feel very well-versed. I mean, I guess I could dig more into the Combine stuff, but I really start getting excited about the draft in February going into March and then watch a lot of tournament. Now, the interesting thing is a lot of the top picks the last couple of years haven't even been making it to the tournament, which is kind of weird. But yeah, I pretty much know. I mean, the only way the Pelicans get a pick is if it's top three. I pretty much know everything there is to possibly know about any of the guys they consider that high. If they were picking, 12 to 17, I might be on Draft Express a lot, but yeah. I can pretty much tell you everything there is to know.
So here's the question. The first question before we get into what could they do if they win this, just talking about the draft picks themselves. Everybody says it's Fultz and Ball at the top, and then it seems like Josh Jackson is a clear number three. Is there anybody that can crack? Because our chances, basically a 4% chance that we will move into one of those top three picks. It's a 1.1% chance, I think, for the top one, something around there. So it's very unlikely, but those are the only picks you can move into because of the way the draft lottery is set up. You can't move up to the fifth pick or the fourth pick. It's you get into the top three or you're where you are. So is there anybody who could crash that top three?
I think it's five. I think there's five guys at a top tier. Now you could separate them. I think Fultz maybe is a tier one and then not all the way down to tier two, but a little drop off, similar to how Karl Anthony Towns was, above everybody. But going into that draft, there was, a Moutier and a Porzingis and a D'Angelo Russell. And let's not forget, Jahlil Okafor was actually a prime prospect. I actually think it's kind of like that with Fultz and the Karl Anthony Town role, but I think there's four. I think there's the two you mentioned, Ball and Jackson. And then I actually think Tatum and De'Aaron Fox are right there. I know Ball gets all the publicity. His freaking idiot dad keeps it going throughout the offseason. But Fox, I mean, it's going to get brought up a lot. Fox absolutely murdered him in that tournament game. And, you know, if you're talking about upside, Fox is your ultra athletic, you know, bouncy guy who is basically a 3-point shot away from being a super elite prospect. I mean, gets to the rim, finishes at the rim. Defensively, the difference between him and Ball would be the difference between, imagine Deron Williams, who I think Ball probably is as a defender, and then imagine a quicker, longer Chris Paul. That's De'Aaron Fox, where you're just talking about a super smart guy who gets into lanes, who has the length to shut you down one-on-one. So I don't know. I know the hype. I know the name. I know the pure point guard skills that Ball has. I wouldn't be shocked to see Fox taken over Ball if a team cares more about winning than, you know, than exposure. And then, you know, Tatum is a guy, too, that is right there with them. So I think those are the five. If the Pelicans land a top three pick and anybody wants illusion of them keeping it, that that you would study over and over and over again.
Yeah, I was playing around a little bit, and I watched, of course, some stuff on YouTube, and I was kind of liking Tatum more than Jackson, just in general. But they're all of these prospects are very exciting. But the reality is, if we get the pick, we'll talk a little bit about what we think Demps will actually do. What is his priority? But even if I was in charge of this team, I'm not sure I would just take Fultz right off the bat if I get the first pick, or even more interesting, if I get the second pick, would I just take Ball or Fox or Jackson or any of those players? I would be on that trade market. I would be out there finding out what I could trade it for. What is it going to take to get some of the big names out there? Both of our stars are 24, 27. If you can grab another guy about that age range, that's pretty attractive. You can go on a run for the next 4 years, 5 years, and be a pretty good team in the West. So, let's talk about our preferred order of what we would like things to happen. And, you know, we could say...
Yeah, well, first, let's do one more big picture thing first, just sure, to lay out how important this could be. If I were to say the Pelicans don't jump into the top three, over the next 8 to 10 years, I won't even say winning the championship, let's just say getting to the finals, what percentage chance would you give them over just one time, at least in the next 8 to 10 years, that they get to the finals if they don't jump into the top three here?
I would say they have a Clippers chance, which is what, like 10%? That would be high.
So you think there's a 10% chance?
Well, it depends on what happens with Golden State, because Golden State is insane, and it's going to be hard to beat that insanity. So it's a little bit unfair. Maybe we move to the Eastern Conference in a when they expand, and we get lucky. I'd expect LeBron to age out sooner than that Golden State team to fall apart. But you know, it's not a high chance. Like, when you enter the Western Conference playoffs, even if you're a good team like, say, Houston Rockets, to make the finals, it's not high. It's 5%.
Yeah. Okay, so let's say, yeah, I think 10 was high. That shocked me. So let's say we go 5 or 6%. So the Pelicans don't get a pick this Tuesday. We simulate this universe 100 times. Maybe 5 or 6 times they end up getting to the finals. And I said 8 to 10 years because, to me, that's pretty much Anthony Davis's window if he even ends up staying that long. So, okay, 5 or 6 times. What if they get the third pick? And then, again, we don't know what they do with it, but then there's all those possible universes. And let's say they get the third pick. What does that odds go up to in your mind?
I think they double.
Okay. Second pick?
I think they're about the same. And I don't see a lot of difference in my mind of the second and third pick. First pick, I think you've probably got more like a 15% chance. I can't tell you how excited I would be about the idea of just Markelle Fultz, Jrue Holiday, DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis running around with Solomon Hill, who will clearly be the best player on the floor. So,
I think first pick, I'm going all the way up to 50%.
Wow. You like Fultz or are you like who they could get with the first pick?
Fultz, I mean, either or. I mean, if you think about that, if you think about the difference between, you know, this team going forward, which I think we saw some flashes of how good they could be. And now you add, I mean, the first pick, you've done the numbers before. It turns into an A player more than 50% of the time, right?
Yeah, it's about 60%, and you get a rotation. I mean, not a rotation, but a rotation or starter, quality starter, another 25% of the time. So
let's say, I mean, in this pick, if you have the first pick, I think you should get an A player in this draft. I mean, now injuries could always happen. Like, Fultz is a guy, I don't think there's many can't-miss guys. Fultz, if he does not get injured, I don't see any way that he's not an A player at some point of his career. And, you know, there's other guys, there's more risk, whatever. But in this draft, after you do your due diligence, and if you stay away from injury, you should get an A player. And then if you trade it, you'll get an A player too. And if you have one way or the other, if you have three A players on one team, and then, you know, also the appeal that that will have for bringing other people via trade or even, you know, the veterans who start taking smaller deals to come to you because now you have a chance to win. If they get the number one pick in this draft, which again is 1%, I would say in all the different ways that it plays out, however it plays out, I would say half of the time they get to the final sometime in the next 8 to 10 years, because I think they add a player good enough to where I don't think Boogie leaves. And then if Boogie doesn't leave and they're good enough, I don't think AD leaves. So you're talking about having those guys for that entire window. And I just think that it greatly increases where, like I said, I think you got a 5% chance, maybe even less, if they don't keep this pick. I think it goes all the way up to 50. And your point about second versus third and all that is pretty interesting. But to me, when people always, you know, people ask me a lot, what could we get if we got, you know, the second pick? Who could we trade it for? The third pick or whatever? That's impossible to answer without knowing who's in front of you. Because if Boston's in front of you, if the Lakers are in front of you, then they're going to have first crack at Paul George or whatever. But let's say you get the second pick, LA falls out of the top three. So now they basically have almost nothing to go get guys. And then let's say you get two and Boston gets four or whatever. They have other things that they could attach, but are they going to give all that up now to go and get a Georgia Butler? So that could give you, you know, more of a driver's seat where, you know, if Orlando gets one, you get two. Like, Orlando is not going to go trade for a Paul George because he's not going to stay there anyway. So that, what do you get if you get two or three? Well, you also got to tell me who landed the picks ahead of you.
Okay. So let's talk dream outcome. You get the first pick. Got the first pick in your grubby little hand. You can make whatever decision you essentially want at this point. You can go after Butler or Paul George, and you know, who knows what the real chance are of landing either of those players. I think it's fairly good if you have the first pick. But I don't think we're guaranteed. But let's just say they're on the table. We could move the first pick for them. So what would you rather do? Are you so high on the 19-year-old Markelle Fultz that you would draft him and just go? Or if Butler's there or Paul George is there, what would make you turn up your nose at Markelle Fultz and go after those veteran guys? Or even any other veteran guys you might be thinking of that I don't have at the top, like Lillard or someone like that?
Yeah, I would basically, for me, it would be a lot of backdoor channel work and I would be exploring everything. So just if it comes down to my choices are Fultz or George or Butler, I'm a Fultz guy, but it's not just because of the player in the vacuum. I think you've heard me talk about this a lot, about you know, something that's very important on a team is everybody knowing their pecking order and roles. And I could see the hodgepodge of talent and all of that coming together. If you add, say, a Paul George, you have three ultra, ultra, ultra high usage guys. You know, Golden State took four guys, but Klay Thompson, he could play like he did today and not shoot or not score, but he's still going to make huge defensive plays. Draymond Green doesn't need the ball. Durant is so absolutely deadly off the ball that he could be a decoy. Same with Steph. I mean, like, they put together four guys who were almost a perfect match and could be low usage and still impact the game heavily. I don't know if putting together Davis, Cousins, and George or Butler, whatever, is just automatic talent equaling wins. I mean, they're going to be good, of course. You can't put together that much talent and not have wins. But, I don't know if that's the best recipe just because they're all such high usage guys and they're not really stretching the floor when they don't have the ball and, you know, yada, 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 where Fultz could come along and be almost like 19-year-old Tony Parker, where the offense runs through the bigs as he's learning and assimilating. And then as those guys get older, you know, and Fultz enters his mid late 20s, and his usage starts going up, and they even it out, and it's kind of more balanced that way. So I just think that might be a more natural progression and transition. You also have, the ability to spread out your money across. And Anthony Davis, Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins, in 3 years, those three guys alone are making, what, $110 million a year or something insane like that. So, that doesn't mean that I wouldn't explore things. I mean, you start taking Ashik off my hands, or, you know, I hear through the grapevine that if I could go get Paul George, then Kyle Lowry or CP3 are coming along too, you know, even if it's at a discount to form a team that could beat Golden State or Cleveland or whoever, then I start getting excited. But if it's just I could trade the number one pick straight up for Butler or George or keep it and take Fultz, I would actually say my number one option would be keep Fultz. How about you?
Yeah, I'm in line. I've basically ranked my world. If I had the first pick, I would go after – I would draft Fultz if I could, just flat out. My other choices were go after Butler and see what else is part of that deal, because other pieces would have to move as well just to match salaries and so on. Although I guess you could probably arrange to have enough room to bring him in, but that's for the point. Then I would probably go after Lonzo Ball third, and then I'm on board for Lillard, and I don't even have Paul George in there. I understand the fit. I understand Paul George is basically the position we need too. It's like there's a lot there, but I think one of our team's biggest problems is it doesn't have a dynamic creator off a dribble. I think Paul George is kind of weak at that. I think he's already shown he can be kind of a malcontent, and let's face it, he's been on Indiana teams that have just disintegrated because of chemistry stuff. And he's also basically just come out and said, I want to play as a Laker. So why would I go after a guy who's going to be here for a year and give up the first pick when he may just go do his dream job somewhere else? Paul George is just kind of off the table for me. Am I stupid about that?
Well, I mean, I think you're assuming a lot of things. I think you would have conversations with him, and, you know, if he basically told you, no, I'm going to stay, you know, then that's something. And the malcontent stuff, like, the guy has been busting his butt, and you got to remember, when he came into the league, he was on a contender. And he got better and the team around him got worse through no fault of his own. And you know, I don't blame it. The guy wants to win. You know who he actually reminds me a lot of at this point of his career?
But his, why would he pick the Lakers if he wants to win? Why would you ever say the word Lakers in that situation?
I mean, you're just going on a ton of innuendo. I mean, if you could show me the clip where Paul George looks in the camera and says, "I am going to the Lakers," then, you know, I'll eat my hat, but that has not happened.
I mean, I know is I've seen that commercial with Paul George so many times, and it makes me want to rip my eyeballs out every time I see it. Ball game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would have to get to know about it, but he reminds me a lot right now of 2007 Paul Pierce, because it was this kind of similar trajectory. When Pierce came in the league, Boston was winning, experienced a lot of success, and then the team around him just kind of crumbled, and he got frustrated, and he started saying things, and people forget that before Boston made the trade for Allen and KG, it was actually going the other way, where it looked like they were going to trade Pierce, that they were going to have to trade Pierce, and kind of move on from him. So I get it. I don't blame George for that. For me, I agree that it's the contract thing. I think your on-court worries are legitimate, where he's not an excellent creator. But again, I think the big X factor in all this is if you get George or Butler, you know, you're able to kind of go to other agents around the league and start asking, like, hey, would this guy be interested? Would that guy be interested? Because I don't think any of those major free agents or even guys who are going to start to ask out and want to be traded are looking for New Orleans now. But all of a sudden they put those three guys together. And I think a lot of guys would have eyes on New Orleans. So it's kind of hard to say what value that has without knowing what guys would now want to come here, where Markelle Fultz, as much as we like him and every draft analyst or whatever, a 28-year-old player looking for a ring could not care less about some 19-year-old kid. You know, they know that that kid is not winning for years. So they don't care about that. But you get Paul George or Butler on this roster with Boogie and AD, and if that attracts a fourth guy, then basically you're talking about George and that guy or Markelle Fultz. So that's the part that's kind of tucked away.
Okay. Well, so we had a little back and forth on Twitter about this, too. You had a different order than the one I just put out there. You had some other things inserted, and you had Lonzo Ball way down the list. I had him third, essentially. So what are your other thoughts? Rather than take Lonzo Ball, what are you looking at?
Yeah, the Lonzo Ball, I pride myself on being a very rational person. And if it was just the player, I would probably be able to do it. I can't tell you how much I hate his father. Like, hate. Like, hate. Like, I think he's the Black Donald Trump. I think he's the same exact person. He just thankfully doesn't have the nuclear codes. And, you know, he's just talking about other stupid stuff. But I cannot stand that he's like, if you were to draw up the exact type of person I hate, that guy embodies all of it. And it's just, it would be very hard for me. Again, if this is entertainment and I want to root for the team and like the guys, like Lonzo Ball has never said anything like his father. He seems like a great kid. I couldn't turn on, you know, the Pelicans just lose game 5 of the Western Conference Finals and they're down 3-2. And then, you know, the big story that day is Lonzo Ball's dad says that Anthony Davis, you know, was playing soccer or whatever. Like, I would wind up hating it so much that's honestly a huge factor to me. And I can't rationalize it because it goes beyond basketball and I'm supposed to be more logical. But that is honestly the reason I'm so down. Like, I was rooting against his son during the tournament, and I was happy when he was terrible against Kentucky and they got beat. And that sucks because he really does seem like a good kid. I could not hate his father. Maybe if his father like kicked a dog or something, I could hate him more, but I hate that type of person so much. So that's a big part of it for me. But honestly, the one that I would be really interested in is, Because, again, if we move up into this top three, it's very, very likely that that means that the Lakers don't have a pick at all. Yes. And if that's the case, I think they're in a desperate position. And Magic, you know, it was funny. It was on Jimmy Kimmel a couple of weeks ago, and Jimmy Kimmel, you know, said, you guys kept winning. And Magic, you know, was like, I know. It's like he admitted that it sucked and, you know, that it was frustrating, and now he's nervous about losing the pick because they lose this one and their 2019 pick. But let's say they then drop out and they have no pick. I really think you could go to them and get, you know, a king's ransom almost. And that would be a team that I would really explore. Because, again, I'm looking for guys on the cheap and, you know, also guys with huge upside. And I'm looking to unload some contracts. And, you know, I really think you could do something like give them a Sheik and the pick, especially if they could get Ball and bring him there. And I think they would give you Ingram and Larry Nance Jr. And then I really like Zubik. And, you know, I think you might even be able to do a 2018 pick swap. And, again, if they're terrible again next year, then that's another high pick and commodity. But that's a team that I would really go after. And, like, to me, Ingram is a guy that, again, he's not going to demand high usage early, but I think he's going to be a good spot-up shooter. I think he's going to be very good defensively. He was a guy I loved last year. In this draft, I would have him, you know, right about the same place that I would have Tatum. So if I could unload some contracts, get a couple of nice, really young guys like that with upside, I mean, I think Zubik could be, you know, I don't think he could be Nurkic, obviously, but I think he could be similar to, wait, am I confusing the Diggs again?
Nurkic is the one who went to Portland.
Yeah, so who's the one I'm forgetting?
Jokic.
Jokic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think he could be Nurkic-like. I think he could be that good. Larry Nance Jr. Oh, look at that. The dogs are excited.
Larry Nance Jr.,
obviously. Yeah, so good rotation. But, and then again, like I said, I think you could do something similar to that 2018 pick swap. Should be good. So I would call the Lakers because I really think I love going at new GMs. I love going at, you know, teams that are desperate. And I think that's both right there. And that would be a call I would definitely make.
Okay.
What would it take for you? So let's say Fultz goes up the board. Say we're talking about the second pick here. You know, and Magic wants Ball and he's dying for Lonzo on his team. Like, what would that negotiation, what would be the least you would take, or what would be the trade that would make you happy? Looking at the Lakers roster and what they had.
So, honestly, the only guy I get excited about from that team, I mean, Russell's okay, so I guess I shouldn't just dismiss him. But Ingram is the only one I think who has the upside. And I don't even get that excited about Ingram because I know he's skinny, I know, and he's shown some flashes, but he didn't look impressive last year. And he's going to take another couple of years before he's anything. Which point you're already looking to pay him. And I'll be honest, you know what it felt like to me when I was watching him a couple times last year? Watching Mike Dunleavy. Mike came out of Duke and he was a skinny forward with a lot of passing and he had the nice mid-range fadeaway and he could shoot pretty well from deep, but he just never really turned into amazing. He was fine. He wasn't a bad NBA player. And I just felt like that when I watched him. And I was like, I can't get that excited. So in order for me to do something with the Lakers, Ingram's got to be part of it. But that the pick swap that you mentioned has to be. There has to be another good, tasty, juicy asset in the thing. Has to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like Ingram more than you. And again, a lot of it, okay, offensively, he wasn't that impressive, though. In the second half of the year, he really started turning it up and, you know, his shooting got better. I definitely think that's a part of his game. My question with him is is he a long-term four? And if so, you know, is that going to be an issue? I think he could guard threes, but I think he has high defensive upside. But yeah, they would have to throw in more. But again, unloading Ashik is another thing that is of value to me, especially if I'm getting low salary players back in return. So
well,
that would be,
you know,
we
would have the opportunity there to go after Mozgov, and then we could have, and if we don't send out Ashik, we could have Ashik, Mozgov, and Cousins all at center. We could roll an all center lineup. It'd be awesome.
That would be the dream. yeah, the Lakers are one I would explore. I would, I like Jimmy Butler. I think that he would like to be back in Louisiana. I think he would stay long term. The thing I really like about Jimmy Butler is if this team is playing the right way, they should be in the penalty 5 minutes into every quarter for all 82 games.
Yeah, I got to tell you.
I mean, you're
Butler is easily one of my top six or seven players in this league. Just hands down, I would trade the first pick for him in a second. I mean, Markel Fultz, I love him, but if I can unload anything to Chicago, the difference between the two of them is not enough for me to turn that down.
Yeah, I think you could live at the line again if you play the right way. Again, I'm talking about three pretty average three-point shooters as your stars. I would like to fill around them with gunners, but that I could find later if I absolutely had to. I like Butler for that reason, just because, I mean, you're talking about three guys that just between the three of them should get to the line 25 times a game. On some nights, 40. So I really like that. I've always been a fan of – I just think getting to the free throw line does so many good things for your team, gets you into the bonus, obviously, gets the other team in foul trouble, gets you cheap, easy points. I really like Butler. So he would be the one that I would really go after. Obviously, the contract is good. I know him. I have him for a couple of years. So – that's another one for me. And then, you know, kind of the idea of trading down, getting a young vet and a young player. So I think it would be very hard for Dell when he knows that, okay, we've got to be good next year. If I've survived this far, there's no way I'm surviving one more year. It would be hard to just get a 19-year-old player. But what if he could get a 19-year-old and a young vet or two that could help him win this year? So, you know, you drop down to 4, 5, 6, whatever, and you get Evan Fournier, you know, you dump a Sheik on them, you dump a Gents on them. So you get Fournier, and then you also get Fox or Tatum. You know, then now you got the young 19-year-old who you could groom and maybe could be an A player for you. And then you've got Fournier, or if it's not Fournier, I'm trying to think who else would be in that range. I mean, Philly doesn't really have guys unless they're willing to give up Saric, which, yeah, I mean, they might with as many four. So, you know, what if you could get Saric and De'Aaron Fox or Malik Monk, who could just light it up? So that would be another interesting one for me, is if you could drop down because somebody sees Ball as you know, on level A, and then everybody after that is B. What if you could drop down to 4 or 5, get a good player or two good players now, and you get somebody else who you think could be on par with whoever you take it to?
Yeah, the only other team you hadn't mentioned that's kind of in that upper range, the Suns. I mean, you're not getting Booker. I think they view Booker as the man going forward, but Bledsoe and a pick, if they ended up like 4 or 5.
I think you get more. Yeah. Yeah. Give me TJ Warren also. Yeah, I think you could get even more than that. But yeah, that's one. Or Bledsoe, take back Ashik, and then get me 4 or 5 and give me Tatum, something like that. So those are the ones I would probably explore before Ball. I like Ball. I hate the way he shoots, but it's not because of how it looks. Reggie Miller's shot looked ugly. It's because of how long it takes to get off. And I think that there's going to be a world of difference in the NBA. I don't think he has like the kid comparisons to me are crazy because kid was like crazy agile and a fantastic defender. Like I said, I think Lonzo Ball is Darren Williams with better vision, which is a very, I mean, Darren Williams was a very, very good player in his prime. But I do not see the defense coming from Ball. And, that would be another guy. I mean, and then the sixth guy, I would say that would be really interesting for this Pelicans team, Malik Monk. Again, I think we probably all heard the Wojnarowski podcast where Gentry was talking and he just talked about shooter, shooter, shooter. If you're talking about a shooter in this draft, it's going to be Malik Monk. So yeah, that would be mine, is kind of looking for, can I get a guy who could help me now, who's good and could help me for a couple years. And then also somebody who I think, you know, I don't think it would be crazy if De'Aaron Fox had the same career better than Lonzo Ball, same with Tatum or whatever. So I kind of hedge by doing that. So those would be the ways I would look.
Do you think if you were going to Portland and you were going to try to pry one of their two guards away, are you trying to pry CJ or are you trying to pry away Lillard?
I guess my question is, am I keeping Holiday? Or does that move basically mean I'm saying goodbye to Holiday and that I'm filling my other guard position with an MLE or something like that?
So in this situation, you would probably be trying to re-sign Holiday, I would guess. Because
you need somebody to defend.
Right. Right. I mean, and in a lot of ways, CJ and Lillard, they're very nice compliments to Holiday. Holiday does the things that they don't do better. And they do the things he doesn't do better. So, what do you think?
And if the Pelicans trade for Holiday or CJ or Lillard or CJ McCollum, you think that Holiday is happy to resign, or now he thinks that the ball's just really gotten taken out of his hands?
I think it depends on which one you trade for. I think if it's Lillard, I think the writing's on the wall that he's going to be off guard. If you trade for CJ, that doesn't necessarily mean it.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's why none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. That would be a conversation I would have to have with Drew. Again, look at the salary we're talking about. You're talking about probably at least $25 million a year to keep Drew. So you're at $50 million in your backcourt, and then it's going to take over $30 to keep Boogie. I mean, you're over $100 million between those four by next year when Boogie resigns. So again, there's a lot of things that I am not privy to know that would help me make these decisions. Is Benson going to pay the luxury tax if I have four guys making $25 million a year or more on my team? Is Drew going to resign, all those things? So let's, just going best case scenario, let's say Benson says, yeah, in 2 years when we get there, I'll pay the luxury tax if we're a contender. And Drew says, yeah. Get either of those guys and I want to win, I'll do whatever it takes, so I'll resign. My preference of the two would probably be Lillard, just because, we could look at all the stats and I think McCollum's a fantastic offensive player. There is something to say for a guy that teams just fear and what that does to defenses. And, you know, McCollum is kind of, to me, he's almost like a slightly evolved Kevin Martin in his prime, where he's going to get buckets and he's going to get points, but I don't think he terrifies the defense. I think Damian Lillard, even when he's off and he's 30 feet away from the basket, teams are still terrified he's going to pull it and they're coming out after him, and I just think that there's a huge value to that. So for me, it would be Lillard again if Drew is staying in either scenario.
Yeah, Lillard is. I'm the same way. I like CJ a lot, but the number one thing, the number one failure I see with this team is it has no master ball handler who can just attack a guy on the perimeter and get into the paint consistently. Drew can do it sometimes, but not against certain players. And that means that we're basically running a pick and roll that can be turned back multiple times, and you're hoping you can get some sort of post up lob to one of the two bigs, or the bigs have to come out and work themselves from the perimeter, which is going to work against a lot of teams during the regular season. But in the playoffs, people are going to send guys at them when they do that, and that's going to make their lives a lot more miserable. But if you have Lillard, who can just, you know, get to the middle of the floor whenever he wants to off of his crossover, that makes this team way more dangerous in my mind.
Yeah, it is. It's fun to dream. So those are the things that we would be interested in doing. What does your gut tell you as far as what the Pelicans organization and Dell specifically ends up doing? Let's start with they have total control. Everything's on the table because they land the number one pick. I think, you know, Dell's going to interview guys and he's going to get to know and at least stay open to that. But what do you think his priorities look like, or his most likely to least likely scenarios?
I think there would be a 90% chance that the pick would be traded for one of the best veteran he can get. Now, I'll say if he can't get like Paul George or Butler or Lillard, if he can't get like an all-star player, he's not trading it. He's going to take it. If all of those things fall through, or all of them say, there's no way I'm taking Ashik as the salary filler. You have to give me something good. And I don't even know, like, would you balk at Etuan more if you're getting someone back like Butler? Probably not. But if they completely balk at the kind of salary fillers you have out there and you'd have to give up some good stuff besides the pick, then, you know, I think he would probably take the pick and go. But I really think that he would be trying to land one of those guys, and I think one of those teams would pull the trigger to land Fultz or just be able to do whatever they want with the top of that draft.
Yeah.
What are your odds that we would hold on to, we would actually draft a player and that player would play the first game of the season for the Pelicans?
I would say 5 to 10%. Yeah. I mean, for me, they're all freshmen, right? Yeah. All the top guys.
Yeah.
Are 19 years old.
Josh is a little older. Josh Jackson, for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, he has a couple of character red flags in his past. It's just very hard for me to see them coming along and taking it slowly. Now, I do think those odds go up if he has a conversation with Benson or whoever, and it's basically said, you know, told him, look, we're not going into the luxury tax. You know, or the only guy who, you know, the only team willing to pull the trigger is the Pacers, and it's Paul George, and Paul George's people are saying, yeah, I'll come and I'll enjoy it and I'll give you a fair chance the next year in free agency, but I'm not going to commit to anything and keep my options open. That would be really scary. So, you know, I think a lot of factors wind up playing out, but yeah, I think the Jimmy Butler thing would be what he would go after pretty aggressively. And it would be interesting to me to see what that would look like. I just don't know, you know, Portland is a pretty aggressive team. Like I wouldn't be shocked if they were willing to do that. And I know Dell loved Lillard coming out that year in the draft. So that's one that kind of makes sense. But again, you know, if Holiday's people tell you that if you do that, Drew won't have any interest in playing there, then you're trading basically the number one pick for Ian Holiday for Lillard. So I think there's a lot of ways that play out to where maybe he doesn't have the choice. You know, that said, I think a lot of teams will fall in love with Fultz, or maybe it's not even Fultz. Maybe they fall in love with somebody else that could be number one. And when you have that number one pick, that is right behind the already established superstars, the most coveted thing that NBA teams want, so that when push comes to shove, I think you have a lot of opportunities there. And there might even be a few that we don't even, you know, aren't even considering, especially in this era where if we get another Golden State Cleveland Finals, some teams might be like, you know, this is just hopeless, and maybe there's some 25-year-old superstar right now where we think the team would never think about trading him, but by the, you know, he has 2-3 years left on his contract, and what's the point? Because the team's not going to contend in that time period. So I think there could be a lot of things on the table to where I would say, yeah, I think 5-10% chance he actually takes it, picks it, and that guy is playing games for the Pelicans next year.
Yeah, the only other – I've toyed with a bunch of teams like Toronto. Just there's a couple of teams I was toying with, but it never really came to anything I liked except for one potential. What if Charlotte realized this team's not going anywhere? Hey, we'll, for the number one pick, we'll give you Kemba Walker and Batum, and we'll take back Ashik.
Oh, I don't think that'd be nearly enough. I mean, I guess it's how much you like Kemba, but I think you're talking about a B-plus and a B-minus player, and I couldn't – I'm trying to think of any number one pick that would have been traded for that, like, you know, in a normal draft, not the 2013 draft, but no,
Bennett.
I couldn't. Yeah, no, that draft was
Did you see that
horrid.
Bennett, he got kicked off his Turkish team. Like, that's how far he's fallen. It's his Turkish team waived him.
Ouch. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of one. Like, would it, after what happened in this postseason, would it be unimaginable, knowing how aggressive he is and how he sees people as commodities, unimaginable that Morey sends Harden for the number one pick?
Wow.
Especially if he feels, I mean, especially if, like,
I think that's
think
a bit much,
it, like,
but yeah. Wouldn't be shocking.
But I mean, logically for Morey, like, he knows, like, he couldn't even overcome San Antonio without Parker and Kawhi. Like, he knows there's no little tweak he's going to do that's going to get him there in the next couple of years. And, you know, I don't know. That's what I'm saying, is there's something out there that could just be absolutely crazy that you're not even thinking about. Like, I think the only guys completely off the table are guys like Antetokounmpo. You know, obviously you're not getting Durant or Steph or LeBron, so we could get rid of those guys. But, like,
right.
Kawhi, Antetokounmpo, Karl Anthony Towns, I think those guys would be off the table. But
you could probably get Wiggins.
Oh, yeah, you could get Wiggins and then some. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Or the other thing I always, you know, we're talking about all these stars, but, again, if you have two huge high-usage guys like this, I don't know if the right answer is bringing another high-usage guy. What if you got Chris Middleton and Thon Maker and Brogdon? What if that was the package? What if Milwaukee said, okay, we want a surefire just megastar to put next to Antetokounmpo, and we think that, you know, Fultz is it. Jason Kidd's in love with him. What if they came to you with a package like that, where you got Middleton, who's just this medium usage guy who's a gunner from the outside, you got Brogdon, who plays multiple positions, smart guy, cheap contract, good defender, and then Thon Maker is like your huge upside backup big who could shoot, and, you know, with the versatility that he has, it wouldn't be insane to have a 3 7-footers and Maker, Cousins, and Davis out there just with arms everywhere. Like, what if Milwaukee came to you with that? It would make sense for them. What if they pitched something like that to you?
I would strongly consider that, especially if they would toss in, like, their, well, definitely toss in their pick this year.
or took back a
team. Where is their pick this year? I guess they're probably, they made the playoffs, so they're probably like, what, 16th or something like that.
Yeah. See, to me, I would rather them take back a Sheik or even, you know, a Jensen coupon or whatever. But
No, I mean, that's an attractive idea. And if you re-sign Drew and you're rolling with Middleton, Brogdon, and Drew as your backcourt with Hill on the wing and Davis and Cousins in the front court, that's a pretty scary team.
Yeah, and then you still got youth and potential and Thon Maker and Diallo behind them.
Yeah.
Yeah, then all of a sudden you're talking about depth and you're talking about a better fit. Like, Paul George blows Chris Middleton and Brogdon out of the water in a vacuum. But when you're talking about actually constructing a team and different elements and role players and yada, 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 can you make the argument that those guys would be better for team construction, for salary and roster construction, you know, all of that stuff? So that would be the other one that interests me. We're looking at the swap for a star player. What if you could go to teams and get two or three really good rotation players that are defensive minded, that could hit from the perimeter, and then one of those guys still has massive potential? So I would look around at teams with, you know, stuff like that. You brought up Phoenix. What if I could get Dudley for now, Bledsoe for now, and then you give me either Bender or Chris?
Yeah.
You know, as my upside guy, and then they just get a Booker Fultz backcourt to basically start with, and then they're bad again next year, and then they get another pick next year. Plus, they still have one of the stretch fours that they drafted last year. So I that would be the other interesting path for me, is getting two or three guys.
You think we could trade the pick for Buddy Hield? I hear he's worth a lot.
Yeah, what could Sacramento give you? So they'd have their own pick. So you get Buddy back, maybe their pick. Yeah,
and their pick's like Buddy what, back, 10th or pick. Something?
Well, it'll be their pick. So, yeah, it'll be like, well, eight. I guess we would have leapfrogged them. So, yeah, let's say 9.
You get that guy out of NC State. Is that point guard? Or
Dennis Smith, yeah, I like him a lot. Yeah, no, my dream way this draft goes is New Orleans gets number one, then Sacramento gets number two, but then they've got to give it to Philly.
That's just
and
cruel.
Then, like,
that's just cruel.
I'm petty and I'm cruel. And then somebody like Orlando gets number three, and that bumps the Lakers out. And then, yeah, that would be great. I would love Sacramento. Can you imagine Sacramento fans, like, if the draft went that way, of they lose the pick to New Orleans, and, you know, they're teased for a second because they got a top three pick, but oh, no, you got to send that out because you wanted to sign freaking, who was it, Rondo, and I don't even remember what other garbage they signed, Kufos. Whatever. Yeah, and then wasn't it a Flala or somebody else? That summer.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's my dream of how it goes out. But, yeah, I mean, that's another one where I do think Dell will explore all those things, but I wouldn't be shocked for him to get a poo-poo platter of two, you know, guys that could help him now, and then another one with upside. Like I said, something like a Middleton-Brogdon-Thon-Maker package. I don't even think Milwaukee – I think Milwaukee thinks Thon-Maker is going to be a star/superstar. But even if it's just Middleton – Brogdon, and then, like you said, the pick, and they take back Ashik. You know, I would think about that.
I wouldn't take it, but I'd think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, depends what you like of the pick. So, but yeah, I think that's the way that Dell goes. But what do you think? I mean, Gentry has a voice in his room. What do you think he would be pushing for as a coach that's, you know, still under contract, but obviously as his feet to the fire a little bit? What do you think he's screaming for in that draft room?
He wants a point guard who can actually be more of a Steve Nash clone than our friend Drew Holiday is. I think the one thing that was absolutely clear by the end of the season is that offensively, Drew Holiday was not the point guard that Alvin Gentry wanted at all. He wanted to play. He had basically settled into having him play off the ball as much as he possibly could, unless there wasn't any other way to do it. So I think he wants a guy who can actually dribble and attack off the pick and roll, and make good decisions. So maybe he'd argue for Fultz because that's one of the things Fultz is really good at. But you know, aren't a ton of point guards that are sitting on the market that are amazing that are ready. Like, you know what I mean? That's one of the reasons why I actually thought about Kemba is Kemba can actually do a pick and roll pretty well. He's missing a lot of other pieces to his game as a point guard, but that's what I was thinking. But I can't think of we're not getting Chris Paul. We're not these guys are the guys who could really do that aren't there. So,
and that's what's interesting to me is there's a couple of guys in this draft that if Gentry had 5 years security, I think he would really be interested in. I mean, I think Lonzo Ball, again, if he hits the ceiling, is his pure point guard, is Nash-esque. You're talking about being able to push the ball. Well, first of all, get the rebound, push it, has amazing vision. We don't know if he'll be able to get his shot off, but when he did get it off in college, hit it at a high percentage. I mean, if you're looking at Nash-esque, that would be Ball. Fultz could push. He has good vision. You know, Fox, again, Fox could be kind of like a Barbosa-Nash hybrid of what he had in Phoenix. I mean, you're talking about Barbosa's speed and just an absolute blur, but with the ability to, you know, find the open guy and play well in the pick and roll again.
I gotta say,
he needs to shoot.
I can hear lust in your voice when you talk about De'Aaron Fox.
I mean, I was in love with Moutier, and I might be wrong on that one at the end of the day, but he's a better, more athletic, better defensive Moutier, and it's with those guys when they're just a jump shot away, like literally, I guess he's got to put on some weight, but you're talking about like an elite athlete who's a smart kid, you know, a winner, like he has all the intangibles. He's not just one of those elite athletes who's dumb and gotten by his whole life because he's an elite athlete, but he has all of that. And I mean, his jumper is average now. It's not Jason Kidd coming out of college. I would say it's 10-15% less than CP3, who again was not a great shooter coming out of college.
Kidd was terrible coming out of college.
Yeah, Kidd was terrible, but I'm saying Fox is better than him.
Okay.
He's between Jason Kidd and Chris Paul coming out of college, and you saw him get better as the year went on. Fox is the one. Like, to me, I think Fox has the higher ceiling between him and Ball, and that's why I'm saying I don't know if Ball definitely goes ahead of him. But that's what's interesting to me is if Gentry is 48 years old, he has 4 or 5 years security, he has the system that he has and wants to run, there's guards in this draft that he would love to mold. But do you take Lonzo Ball now and then you might not be the coach next year? Like, does he have any interest in doing that? Or would he prefer somebody like Kemba Walker, who definitely he's not going to be that A-plus superstar, but he's going to be much better than what he has right now. That's what's kind of interesting to me with Dell and Gentry kind of running the show is, are they just going to do what's best for the franchise, you know, as if they had 5 to 10 years of security, or are they self-aware about, you know, kind of their own personal outlook, and therefore they're just going to do what's best for the franchise and themselves in the short term?
Let me ask you a question then, because this is a natural turning point. If any member of the Tom Benson team had called a press conference, I don't know, a week or two ago, and sat out and said, These guys are our guys. Demps and Gentry, they are 100% our dudes, and they're going to be with the organization going forward. Is that helpful or not helpful? Do you think that matters? What's your take on that?
So matters to who or for what? Like to the fans, to Dell and
Gentry. Do you think they would have a shift in their thinking about how they should be approaching this offseason? Or do you think it's the same thing?
I think it's pretty much the same, not just because of job security, but just like these are two ultra competitive guys. And if you give ultra competitive people, you know, who have lost the past couple of years, the option to be able to win next year, you know, at a high level or get better, but not really, you know, but the big winning will come maybe in year two, three, or four. I think they're almost always going to choose what's right in front of their face. And that's the danger in losing in culture. And, you know, everybody wants to tank all the time, lose for all these years. But when you do that, then you start to get antsy and you don't have a culture built up where if the Spurs somehow got the first pick this year, I don't think they would even entertain the thought of trading it for Jimmy Butler. They would take their guy and then, you know, they would, because they're not desperate to win because they have done so much winning. I don't even know how much of it is the job security as much as these are competitive people in this league. Dell has been losing, like, I mean, he's won 2 years, right? He had Chris Paul's first year, and then he got smacked in the first round, and then losing, right. losing. Another little playoff swept, losing. Like, I just think he wants to win. So I think that's it more than job security. But,
okay.
But I mean, what do you think? I mean, I know there's this thing where people, and I get the overall frustration. It's not just this isolated thing of them not saying anything about Dell and Gentry, and then Gentry going on Woj's podcast and going, yeah, I guess I got a job. I haven't heard anything, and that just infuriates people. But it's not just this one isolated incident. It's combine that with the fact of how the team doesn't really, up until this year, really disclose a lot of injury situations, and then just kind of leaves people hanging. Just there's really no information coming out. What are your overall thoughts on just really nothing being said by the organization about Dell and Gentry security? And even them, when they talk about it, they just say, yeah, haven't heard anything. I'm under contract, so I'm going about it as if I have a job.
So here's what I would say. It feels like there's not enough communication between Gentry and Demps and the higher-ups. Like, the fact that, like, on one hand, it feels a little weird the way Gentry said it on the Woj podcast. And this is Woj, whatever the hell his name is. it's one of those things where the way he said it was kind of like, yeah, I guess I got a job. And it was kind of like offhand and semi-awkward. And it didn't inspire me with confidence that they're like in a room, Demps and him and, you know, maybe Lauscha or Loomis. And they're saying, this is our plan going forward over the next few years. And he's like, great, let's do it. That they're getting any feedback for. But then if I flip it, if I'm Loomis and I've been working on all this stuff for the Saints, and, you know, fine, he's got a lot to do there. But when he looks over at the Pelicans and he hasn't really made a decision yet, maybe he's semi-fine. He likes the fact that they made the DeMarcus Cousins trade. He saw the uptick in season ticket sales, and he's like, great, this is kind of what we're hoping for. We gave him some time. We let him hang himself last year, and he pulled off a big trade. So we'll continue to go this way, and he's under contract, so why do I need to say anything? And also, it also leaves him open. If he goes out there, let's say, a week ago and says, there are guys, I go before the press and say, this is our guys for next year. And then suddenly, like 3 weeks from now, a GM that he really likes is suddenly available on the market, or there's a chance he could go, like, maybe he really likes Doc Rivers. Who knows? But the Clippers fall apart and Doc Rivers says, I want out, I want to go coach somewhere else. If he's already said Doc Rivers is our guy, he's going to look like a complete jackass if he goes and then tries to get Doc Rivers. So there's got to be, like, in his world, there's nothing really that good you're going to get from going out there and saying, these are our guys, except for you're going to disappoint some fans who really want them fired. But there's plenty of upside for just saying, just keep your mouth shut. They're under contract. Like, let's let it ride. That's my take.
Do you think that there's before I always assume that the higher ups are stupid, because I really do think, maybe not stupid, because they're smart people, I guess, in general, but just really have no idea in comparison to, you know, the other 29 owners and higher ups on how to run a team. I almost always assume the worst with them, just because the Pelicans are not the top priority and, you know, they don't really aren't experts in the space. So I always assume the worst, but I like to entertain and maybe think that they're way smarter than they're letting on. Do you think that there's any chance that they're waiting for lottery night, knowing that in this 1% chance that if the Pelicans get this top pick, all of a sudden that is going to become one of the most desired coaching, GM, you know, all of the above positions. And, you know, essentially at that point, if they have all those people clamoring for the job, then they could go ahead and pull the trigger. And if they don't get one of the top three picks, and, you know, Dell and Gentry are moving along fine with this and they give them one more year, any chance that they're thinking that far ahead and that intelligently?
No. I don't honestly see it. Like, there's a lot to, I don't know if they would actually sit in a room and think about that. I don't see them doing that. I think that they're going to, when they get to the point where they're going to evaluate things, I don't think they're thinking strategically of, like, what date do I do this on? And what they're just going to be like, okay, when I get around to looking at these two guys and what I think they've done, they're going to fire them at that spot or not. And they're not going to give a damn about what the actual context around the team is. How many sports teams have we seen them do, like, insane things, like the day before the draft fire somebody, or the day after the draft fire somebody, or right before? We've seen several teams lose their GMs, like, days before free agency opens, which is the craziest freaking thing I've ever seen.
Like, or how about the Hornets letting Jeff Bauer make the picks and then letting him go?
Right.
Like, they had two first-round picks that year. Well, they had one, and then they let him trade back to pay. And, you know, they knew this guy was going to be gone, but they still let him get through the draft before they go. And they hire a coach first, and then the GM. Like,
yeah.
Good God.
People make really dumb decisions, and I really do think that they're sitting at the top of the – they get around to it. They say, okay, what are our evaluations? They talk to the people they trust, and then they make a call right then. And they don't really care what the situation is with the team. Whoever comes in next, that's their job to clean it up.
Yeah.
And there are guys, like, Mark Cuban would never do something as stupid as that. And obviously R.C. Bruford would never do anything like that. There are guys who are smart enough to do that. But, like, let's say Leslie Alexander. Last year there was rumors that he didn't like what Morey was doing. And this was, like, his last summer to really fix it. And did this save it? Or would Morey become a free agent? I mean, I would be excited if they brought in Morey. Would you? Really?
No, okay. I mean, I don't, this is my thing. Like, we evaluate GMs so much on, like, kind of these arbitrary results. I don't know. I mean, you pulled the trigger. This is the hardest thing, is, like, a lot of times when people make arguments for firing Dell, they talk about the mistakes he made 2, 3, 4 years ago, which I get it. But to me, the most important thing is not what he did in the past. Because imagine Dell made all these mistakes in the past, but he learned from it. And now moving forward, he has great eyes, you know, as a GM.
Okay.
then what would be the point in firing him for the pet? And then the same for the positive. Like, yeah, Daryl Morey pulled off the Harden trade in the past. Does that necessarily mean that everything moving forward is going to be good? And, you know, I could point to a lot of things they did wrong. I don't really know. I think GMs get way too much credit and way too much blame. I mean, especially as you hear more of them talk, it's so much of a group consensus and, you know, there's so much luck to it. The Warriors, I could show you three or four different moves that they wanted to make that if they would have ever been able to make them, you know, they would have never had the dynasty and they kind of lucked into it. You want to talk about luck. If the Pelicans wind up being good, you know, I don't know if you saw my tweets, but I know for an absolute fact, this isn't conjecture, it's an absolute fact that if the Pelicans don't get Boogie, Dwight Howard is a Pelican right now. The Pelicans had a contingent trade with the Hawks ready to go if the Boogie one didn't go, and they were giving up two first-round picks in that trade. The trade was, I mean, they were getting rid of Ashiq, which they didn't do in the Cousins trade, but, like, if the Pelicans wind up keeping this pick or even becoming great over the next couple of years, it won't be because Dell is some genius. It's because Cousins became available and the Kings didn't want to pay him and all these other teams that had more to offer didn't want him and that Vivek randomly is in love with Buddy Hield or whatever. Because if that trade doesn't go through, we are looking right now at not having our pick and Anthony Davis and Dwight Howard is our cornerstone.
Yeah.
So, like, there's so much luck to it that it's just very hard for me to prescribe any good or bad to GMs outside of the culture and then the way the empowerment that they give other people, which is why I would think people like Buford are fantastic. But I just think so much as fans and analysts, we just look at results and, oh, he did this trade. That means he's a great GM and he didn't, whatever. I don't know about any of those in a vacuum. And as far as coaches, to me, there's one transcendent coach and then guys like, you know, maybe two or three like Rick Carlisle who are better than most. But I don't really know if any of those majorly moved the needle. But I do believe that if the Pelicans land the number one or maybe even number two pick, that their options for those positions all of a sudden get a lot healthier.
You know what I bet could happen if that happened, if we got that number one pick? I bet Joe Dumars would be available.
Could we get him though?
I don't know.
And you think Avery would leave South Alabama College or wherever he is, and we could get him as a coach?
We could have Dumars and Avery Johnson, our dream.
Yeah. So that's the lottery. And again, you talked about the chances. I want to get to just a couple of rapid-fire questions from Twitter, but I guess just last thing, did you have any other takeaways from Alvin Gentry's podcast with Wojnarowski thinking about what this team is going to do moving forward with or without this pick?
I was comforted by his focus on the fact that this team is going to really struggle defending the pick and roll. Like, that they're going to be thinking about that and working on that, and that was one of his, like, other than shooting, he just basically said he thought that the offense was going to be fine, and that really they just needed to make sure they understood how to defend using these two guys, which that's not the words I expect out of Alvin Gentry's mouth. Like, and maybe that's just an unfair preconception, because he's had defensive teams before, but it's just not what I would have expected out of his mouth.
Yeah. No, it's glad to hear him say that. It sounded like he's very, you know, he's not going to try to put square pegs into round holes and just force them to play 7 seconds or less basketball, that they're, you know, he wants to move to a lot of high-low and he wants to, you know, kind of change up his system a bit. So it seems like he knows what he should do. Again, my rationale has always been, I agree, that's the way the Pelicans should play, but would you get a coach that that's not his natural or best, way of playing to do that. I know you're not a big football guy, but, you know, Sean Payton coaches the Saints, and he's just, he likes to run the ball, but, he likes to throw the ball all over the yard. He's a passing guy. And if they just wound up getting the best running back in the league and best offensive line, and the way for them to play was just to run the ball 65% of their time, get 5 yards at a pop, and get first downs and slowly move the ball down the field. Like, I'm sure he knows how to do it, but why, if that's what your roster dictates, why would you get a coach who essentially has to coach left-handed? Like, yeah, I know Gentry knows more about basketball than I ever have, so he could figure it out. But if that's the way that your roster is saying you have to play, why wouldn't you get a coach that's his natural inclination? That's always been the question for me.
Yeah, I don't know. And, I was actually trying to think, like, what coaches I would like to bring in. But I'll be honest, I don't know enough about assistant coaches out there to say this is the kind of guy that I want. And I can look at systems, and there are certain systems that I think could be intriguing. But I'm also thinking, hey, I have two big men, so I look for teams that have had big men success, and a lot of them out there. So, again, my pool is limited. So
yeah. No, for me, it's always been Ettore Messina. He's an assistant with San Antonio, but if you read his stuff coaching in Europe, he is all about basically getting spacing through throwing the ball into big men, into both posts. And, what system I would run and the one I would study all summer if I was Gentry?
The triangle.
It's one team that – no. It's one team that I haven't seen brought up, but the second I say it, I guarantee you're going to be able to visualize our roster playing like this team if they did it right. The early 2000s Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, I actually was guessing you were going there. Yeah.
But, doesn't that make sense?
Absolutely. Vadi Divac and Chris Webber, and they had, I don't know if we have a shooter like Peja.
I mean, Solomon Hill is our Peja.
What was I thinking? I'm sure that in the most important playoff game our team will have, he'll be able to hit the side of the backboard for us.
But, yeah, but, like, Bibby wasn't a true point.
True.
I mean, he could score, he could be aggressive, you could see Drew or bringing in somebody else in that role. Like, yeah, Gentry's right, we have to get shooters, but, you've got that high post, that mid post, the low post that you could play in, pass out of, and play with pace. They played with pace, but there was also a lot of cutting. There was a lot of smart basketball there, and I just, to me, that would be the team that I would basically just go in. I would have my video coordinator just basically trace every single play they ran that see, and that would be my playbook, and maybe little variations here and there, but I would just, if I was on NBA 2K, I would just take the Sacramento Kings 2001, 2002 playbook, and that's how I would play with the Pelicans.
So we need to get 70-year-old Rick Adelman back in here.
Yeah, he's alive, right? I can't keep up with him.
Yeah,
he's alive and dead.
I think he's coaching Minnesota, and apparently they complained because he pretty much was never there.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to be around.
He's 70.
Era of technology.
Give him a break.
Yeah. So again, if anybody hasn't listened to that podcast, I would check it out. It's Wojnarowski. Don't worry about how Ryan pronounces it, but it was a pretty good pod. I mean, anything super insightful. But it's so rare that a Pelicans official gets on any kind of podcast that it's always nice to listen to. All right, real quick, I got some Twitter questions just to fire off. For those who wanted to know more about other off-season stuff, Drew, CP3, all that stuff, trust me, we'll get there. We just wanted to dream about the lottery first before our hopes were dashed. But I've got a couple.
Tuesday night is going to either
here.
Be like really, really boring or really, really exciting. It's like there's no in between there.
Yeah, it's true. I think the other part to look for is the other teams that get the top three pick. Like, I would really start being worried if Minnesota got the first pick. You know, there's different situations. If Denver somehow jumps up and gets a top three, like, I think that there's other things to root for. I'm obviously, if the Pelicans don't get it, I want a bunch of Eastern Conference teams to land in the top three, the Lakers to get kicked out, et cetera. So I think there's other things to watch for.
Right. Okay.
So again, BPL did ask us the biggest takeaway from Wojnarowski's pod. We talked about that. Ryan Mish asked, again, assuming that we end up losing our 2017 pick, essentially we could trade our 2018 pick immediately. Like, I know that it would have to officially go through after the draft, but the second we lose our 2017 pick, Dell knows he's able to trade our 2018 pick and start offering that up in some trades that, again, wouldn't be executed till after the draft, but pretty much everything is anyway. What do you think the likelihood would be that sometime this offseason Dell would move the 28 pick, and then what kind of value do you think that pick has?
So, I mean, the 2018 pick, I think, around the league, people expect it to be something around 16 or 17. We've seen the 16th or 17th pick basically generate Butkus. Like, we saw a trade for Marco Bellinelli last year for that pick.
Tim Hardaway Jr., baby.
Tim Hardaway Jr., and he played okay for Atlanta. Like, what you're basically doing in that situation is you can pick one of two things. You can pick a young guy who was picked in the late lottery, who's shown that he can probably play, but there are some warts. Or you can get an older veteran who's going to cost you a whole lot more money, and from a team that's just like, hey, I have a better option coming up, or I'm trying to tear things down. But neither of those guys are going to be a star. Like, the better veteran, like a Solomon Hill style player, maybe better than that, depending on how you feel about Solomon Hill, is the kind of player you'd be looking for.
That's so funny you brought up Solomon Hill, because that's actually the subject of our next question from Hamburguesa Giofredo.
That's pretty good.
He basically just says he saw that Solomon Hill's name was on that magic board that surfaced. What kind of trade value do you think he has, if any? Is he a definite negative? Is he a neutral? Would you be able to get anything positive for him?
So I would say that Solomon Hill is, I would actually consider him a neutral. And considering how I felt about him right around January, that's a major change. But I feel like Solomon Hill, if you're not expecting too much offensively from him, is going to give you what you need defensively from that position at a pretty decent level, and hit enough threes that every once in a while you'll have a nice game from him, and he'll help you carry your team a little bit from range. I wouldn't be surprised if you could, you know, trade him and not have to, you wouldn't have to attach anything to it. You could trade him and maybe get back a guy who's almost as good for you but plays a different position, kind of thing. Those trades rarely happen anymore, but
yeah, no, I agree, and I think the best of Hill is yet to come, and if they traded him now, they would be trading low. I think they believe that more is coming. I want to ask you this question from BPL, just to see if you even come close to understanding what he's talking about. He asked, did Ryan like Drew Holiday's debut as the lead in Get Out? Do you have any clue what he's asking with that question?
Yes, I know what Get Out is. I have not seen it.
Shame.
I don't watch movies. I have kids. Like, I don't watch very many movies. Like, today, I got to admit, today my wife wanted to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So I went and watched that.
How was
Mother's
it?
Day. I liked it. It was really funny. There's moments that are just really, like, you got to go in there and be 100% on board with the fact that the movie is more silly than I mean, there's tons of action, but the silliness is more important than the action. So.
Okay. A lot of the other ones have free agent type of questions. I'll save for another one. Got two more. I got Martin Sinister asked, it's been a conversation of lately. Do you have any take on the LeBron versus Jordan debate, and is it possible that it'll change depending on what happens in this in these playoffs?
Actually, I was thinking about this, and I already have LeBron in my Mount Rushmore of NBA players, which is not the correct analogy because I only have three people in it, and you need four people for a Mount Rushmore. But like, if you told me I could only pick one guy from the entire, and I'd be in their era, so it'd be like you're starting at the beginning of the Michael Jordan era, you're starting at the beginning of the LeBron era, you're starting at the beginning of, in this case, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar era. You can only pick one of them. I almost am a toss-up between these three. LeBron has been going for 14 years at this level. He's already got 2 years on Jordan. And what I'm seeing in these playoffs makes me think he's probably doing it for another three. He is, like, people I remember made the joke that he was, like, when he was coming out of high school, that he was basically Magic Johnson and Karl Malone's body. That's not an inaccurate statement. The dude is just an unbelievably physical monster who with endurance I've never seen before, and the only careers you can look at where they played every single game, every single year, all the time, and never seemed to ever really wear down. Like, that's Karl Malone, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, like, even watching today, like, Kawhi just kept twisting his ankle and he couldn't finish, and it's like, you never see that happen to LeBron. Like, he had the cramp game.
Right.
But, like, how did LeBron play this long and not, you know, twist his ankle or go flying into the reporters and, you know, mess up his knee like Chris Paul did or whatever? Like, I don't know how that happens. But, yeah, to me, that's always the hard one when you're talking about longevity versus peak. Because, like, if the question is who in their peak, their best game, whatever, it's still hard for me to ever imagine anybody besting Jordan, or even if you look at like a 6-7 year run or a 10 year run, whatever.
Right.
But yeah, LeBron, when it's all said and done, is probably going to put up 18 to 20 years of just, you know, all star, all NBA level almost every year, except for maybe the first and the last. That's tough. Are we talking about, like you said, we start at the beginning of their era and they play that long and then you get that many rings or whatever out of them? Or are we just talking about when this guy was at the peak of his powers, he was the greatest of all time? And in that case, I don't think LeBron could ever top Jordan. But if you're taking longevity into it, I think it's legit. And, you know, it's not just rings, but if he gets to a couple more finals, and, you know, I feel the same way that I felt with the Bulls. I remember every year I would pick up the NBA preseason publication, whoever it was, Liddy's or whatever, different one for that year before we had the internet. And it just, like, I would go through and I would say, oh, the Charlotte Hornets, they're projected to be in the playoffs in third, fourth. But, like, it felt so stupid because I knew the Bulls were going to be in the finals and probably win every year. And, like, I hadn't felt that way in a while, maybe in an individual year. But literally every year when we start the season, I know Zach Lowe tries to be like, well, it could still be fun and this or that. You just know LeBron's going to the finals every year. And the only time I ever felt that way was Jordan in his prime.
Yeah, I can't disagree. Like, it's Jordan, you just knew was going to come in and destroy people. I was living outside of Chicago for the first three and the first of the second three. And it was, like, everybody just knew is when Jordan was playing, there wasn't anyone who was going to knock him off his perch. And
yeah.
I mean, I probably, if you were doing the kind of thing where, you know, it's one game and you can have peak LeBron or you can have peak Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or you can have peak Michael Jordan, I mean, yeah, I don't think anyone could argue that you wouldn't take Michael Jordan. Especially if you could, right before the game, tell him, hey, LeBron, he says you're a pussy. Jordan would probably kill him, slit his throat on the floor. And
yeah,
I don't think there's much LeBron could do about it.
That's always going to be the X factor. Is like LeBron wants to win and he loves to win, but Jordan like needed it the way, you know, we need oxygen or it. Like he just, I've never seen anybody like that. Like the ultimate killer. Like even if people who are listening to this pod are a little younger and only saw Kobe, and yet Kobe wanted to like take that intensity and like still multiply it by 5 or 10 for Jordan. Jordan, I've never seen an athlete across any sport like that. I just, that X factor alone. But yeah, if we're talking about the best means, looking at their entire body of work and career, yeah, I mean, that's already why LeBron is ahead of Bird. I think you can make good arguments for Bird at his peak being on LeBron's level or maybe even better. But the fact that LeBron did it for this length of time makes him already considered the best small forward ever.
I think Bird had, what, 9 good years in the league before his back fell apart? It was, I don't even know if it was 9, but 9.
But so, he had like 4 amazing, like where I would put some of those years up with anything LeBron has ever done.
And for any of you who are rolling your eyes every time I say Abdul-Jabbar's name, just go look at his career and realize that he came into the league in 1971 and won a championship and destroyed everybody. And in 1984, I think it was, or 85, he was still destroying everybody and winning championships.
Oh, 87, yeah. 87, he won one and destroyed everybody.
5 MVPs. He is the other longevity. There's Karl Malone, there's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and now there's LeBron. These are the guys who just nobody could ever, you know, take out of a game because of injury.
Yeah, no, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's career is an even better version of Tim Duncan, who I have in the top 10. But you have that same longevity, but more dominance.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting one. Last two I got are mine. One, I'm putting up a piece on Wednesday after the Pelicans lose the draft about guys who the Pelicans could look at 40. And I'm pretty good at this. If you look at my second round gems last year, it was Brogdon. It was Zipser. It was basically everybody who ended up being good. I even had Wayne Selden in there who wound up starting on a playoff team at the end of the year. So I'm pretty good at locating the gems. I know you've started peeking around. Is there anybody that you would say that is a possibility of being around 40 that you would like?
Honestly, I have not studied it enough. You'll have to ask me that question a little bit later.
Oh, sure. After my piece comes out, you just steal one of mine.
All right, here. I'll guarantee you that I will pick a couple names before I read your piece. And if they're in your piece, I will admit it on Twitter.
All right. And then the last one is just a personal question. I want to ask you what you would do because this has been my situation. So moved into a new house in Salt Lake. And, you know, I went and I ordered the internet that I'm going to need to put in the house. And I thought nothing of it. I get there and there's still no installation date. And I talked to them. They said, it's going to be 60 to 90 days. So I've had no internet.
Seriously?
Yeah. No internet, no television, absolutely nothing for this. I think I've been here for like a week to 10 days. It's felt like 10 years. So I basically have to, and now all my data is pretty much gone because I burned through that in the first 5 days. So I have two options. Right. I have an Xbox One that has a Blu-ray player. Now, I have about 1,000 DVDs, and I have 3 Blu-rays. Inception,
okay.
Batman, whatever the second Batman is, Batman Return, whatever the good one, or the Dark Knight.
Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or is that, that's the third one.
I like the first one better.
So Batman, so whatever the second one is, I think it's just the Dark Knight, right? Because isn't the third one the Dark Knight Returns? Whatever. But, so I've got Inception, the Dark Knight, and I've got, randomly, I think I got it for like $4, Get 'Em to the Greek. So I've got three DVDs. Okay. I got three DVDs, but I've got like three Blu-rays, but I've got like 1,000 DVDs, all my favorite movies, everything, you know, from Casablanca all the way up to Memento, just all my favorite, plus like all my television shows that I love and all the seasons of those, Lost, Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Entourage, Don't Judge Me. So that's what I have for entertainment, right? Here's the issue.
Okay.
All I've got is the Blu-ray player, so it plays my three Blu-rays perfectly. When I put in a DVD, the sound is about, it starts off about a second and a half off, and it gets about another tenth of a second more off every minute or so. So by like 30 minutes into the movie,
that's
it's like 3-4 seconds off. But the picture's fine. The words come out just not at the right time. What would you do? Would you be watching Inception and Batman and Get 'Em to the Greek over and over again? Or would you be watching the DVDs and just dealing with the sound?
I would, if I, those are my only two choices, I would watch those three movies over and over again. But of course, what I probably would do is just find my computer and put it in the DVD drive there and watch it on my giant monitor. So.
Yeah, all I have is laptops and they don't have freaking DVD players anymore. My Apple Airs or whatever I've got, my Mac Airs. So
can't you like go to like Walmart and buy some sort of like crappy $20 DVD player?
I guess that's a possibility. I'm just, you know, I'm trying not to break, and I'm hoping that these installers come earlier. But yeah, I've I guess.
So anybody, you're still in Utah though. You didn't move out of Utah, right?
Right. Yeah.
All right. So if anybody on listening to this podcast lives in Utah. He really, really needs someone to bring him a DVD player. Everyone's got one sitting in the attic.
I used to have 8 of them. I like threw them all away. I didn't think I'd need them anymore. But
An Xbox 360 that's, you know, just sitting around and still works, you don't need it because the games, you play them on Xbox One now.
And that's another thing.
PS3.
Before my move, I actually had three Xbox 360s. I threw them all out. Yep. So I did this to myself, but this is where I'm at. I could quote any line from Inception or The Dark Knight. I haven't broke down and watched Get 'Em to the Greek yet. I still don't even know why I own that one, but that's probably going to have to be next.
So you could read a book.
Yeah, I guess. my wife suggested board games yesterday. I almost did that, but I don't know.
Yeah, you could play some Stratego.
Oh, love Stratego. Stratego and Risk. Those are my two.
Right.
But she's not much.
I always preferred Axis and Allies to Risk. But
yeah, but now I need a challenge for that, and the wife doesn't really challenge me at those two games. I hope she can't hear this. Oh, she heard it. Shit, I'm in trouble. All right, on that note.
All right, thanks for listening to In the Know, and we will be back. Probably not too long after maybe next week or the week after.
After we win the lottery.
If we win the lottery, we will definitely have a podcast just so you can all hear us giggle.
I like to giggle.
But if we don't win the lottery, it might be a little bit so we can absorb where the 40th pick of the draft kind of people and start talking about them.
And then trade that for money.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is 4 missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare.
Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour three-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.